WBEZ is supported by Shedd Aquarium, where animals, people, science, and conservation come together. Through community outreach, education, and research, Shedd protects the water that supports life in the Great Lakes region and beyond. More at sheddaquarium.org. Shedd Aquarium, for animals, for people, for communities, for love of waterkind. This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. At the end of this podcast, stick around for a rundown of the latest news here in the Chicago area. But first, bringing home a brand new baby. It's something that many parents look forward to. That car seat is installed, the nursery is decorated, and the newborn clothing is folded and tucked away neatly in drawers. But for families with babies in the neonatal intensive care unit, that moment can be delayed by weeks or even months. During that time, parents juggle hospital visits and their duties at work, while also worrying about the health of their premature baby. A new Illinois law aims to ease some of that burden by guaranteeing parents with babies in the NICU up to 20 days of unpaid, job-protected leave. In this next conversation, we'll hear from a panel of Chicago area moms about what that extra time could mean for families as they navigate one of the most stressful periods of parenthood. At the table with me was Francinette Yamas, a resident of Beecher, Illinois, a mother and founder of the Little Warriors Project, Amanda Santoro, who's a Mount Prospect resident and mom and co-founder of the Little Giraffe Foundation, and Aureli Flores is a Chicago resident and mother. Now, a few more details. Governor Pritzker signed this into law back in September, and it just took effect on June 1st. It entitles parents with children in the NICU some extra unpaid leave that they can use in addition to that Family and Medical Leave Act, or FMLA. The length of your NICU leave depends on the size of the company. So I started by asking each guest for their thoughts about this new law. Francinette went first.
Personally, it is a great start. There's so much that goes into this, the NICU journey, right? Mm-hmm. But I think any step forward is a great step. As far as it being unpaid, I do think it is unfortunate because finances, it is a big hit that parents, NICU parents get. Mm-hmm. However, because of job security being a huge issue, because sometimes it is a long stay in the NICU, I think it is a great step forward.
Yeah.
A lot of families will benefit from this.
Yeah, so issues with the fact that there's no pay during that time, but the fact that they're saying your job is there for you when you come back.
Yes.
That's a plus to you.
That is a great, yes.
What are you thinking, Amanda?
Yeah, so my journey with the NICU was 15 years ago. So there's, in my opinion, been quite a lot of progress. And the fact that we're here today speaks volumes to me because this leave was not available at the time. I was on bed rest for 2 weeks. So 2 weeks in my FMLA was burned immediately. Mm. And I actually chose to go back to work 2 days after I gave birth to preserve the remaining FMLA time.
2 days after giving birth.
Exactly. And that's just because we knew that we would probably have 3.5-4 months in the NICU. And if we take our FMLA time at that time, you have 0 days left when those babies come home. And so for me, I do think, though it would have been unpaid, that time would have been valuable to help me be more part of their care and help with physical recovery.
So you
in my
can
case.
See the evolution, at least with
absolutely
as far as legislation is concerned. And Aureli, what are you thinking?
I was taken by surprise. I didn't know that it was even going on, like any law of this.
And you're the newest, we should say, to this journey, right?
Ago.
Your baby's two,
yes. And well, like mentioned, it's a work in progress, but to even start off, mm-hmm. it's a big win for us.
Yeah.
Because to even shed light to the NICU is big, because I myself didn't even know what the NICU was until I was pushed in there.
Yes.
We're going to talk more about that because I find that fascinating to begin with. But let's go back and talk more about your individual journeys here. First of all, did you have complications during your pregnancy? You're nodding, yes. Francinette.
Yes.
So were you expecting the babies to be in the NICU?
No. I had a complicated pregnancy from the get-go. So I had twins,
mm-hmm.
But mine was a high-risk pregnancy because they were monodye twins, meaning that they were sharing the placenta. So they were separate sacs, but they had the same placenta. And the risk there was that they could share, or for layman's terms, they could fight for the same stream of blood.
Oh, okay.
And leaving one twin
without.
So from the beginning, that was already high risk. Mm-hmm. Twins, as it is already risky. So they already were expected to not go the full 40 weeks as a regular pregnancy. However, mine were extra, extra risky, and they came at 25 weeks and 5 days.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
So there begins the NICU journey.
It just...
Right,
yes.
Away.
And they, you know... like she said, the NICU was, I had never
heard of it.
They do bring, you know, because I was in the doctor more times than I could count prior to their birth. They do bring doctors and tell you, you know, that you can possibly have them in the NICU. And but until somebody tells me what the NICU is and what it entails and shows me, I honestly was like, okay.
Right. And you're a new mom.
And exactly.
Trying to, you know,
I had never
protect your babies.
Yes.
Like, what is this?
It's like, okay. Yeah. But it was it was intense. And yeah. I was on bed rest. I was supposed to be on bed rest from May to September. But it lasted me 2 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah.
Your NICU story, Amanda, began in 2011 when your twins were born 14 weeks premature.
Correct.
Is that right?
Yeah, 25 and 6, so one day later.
Wow.
Yeah, so very similar timelines. Also twins, really not high risk, other than it being a twin pregnancy, but I was showing signs of premature labor actually at like 20 weeks.
Okay.
And then I was able to go home, and then the last 2 weeks I was on bed rest upside down in a bed, which is a fun way to be.
Wow.
Oh,
so that was
trying to picture that.
That was not fun either, just trying to keep them in. So it lasted also 2 weeks for me.
Oh, look, they had me with my legs crossed. So
okay.
With you, it was at least.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just trying to get to 34 weeks, but I got to 25. So it's very similar. I was ready for the long haul, but it didn't last.
Look, I was dilating at 20. So there we go.
Exactly. Very similar. So you just have to get ready for very tiny, very vulnerable babies.
Yeah. And Arely, I mean, again, you had no idea what the neonatal intensive care unit was. How long was your daughter, Allison, in the NICU?
She was in the NICU for almost 6 months, from June to December.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I didn't know what the NICU was. And
what do you think that lack of education about it did for your journey, especially at the start? Was there confusion?
Yes.
A lot of questions?
I was very confused. I didn't know what questions to ask. And I just researched, and came up with all the answers in one night. Literally what I could have. You know, obviously we all expect to have a normal pregnancy, typical.
An Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
An Instagram pregnancy,
yeah.
You said?
Or just like what everybody else experiences, yes. Because that's all we hear about. We don't hear about the NICU. We don't hear about possible complications. And even though I was 36 weeks already, and that's, I questioned, I'm like, but I'm already 36 weeks. Why am I here?
Right, because full term would be 37.
Yeah.
So right?
I'm like, well, and I thought too, I'm like, this should be short then because, you know, I'm almost there. Like, we should be out of here in no time.
Mm-hmm.
No, like it doesn't just... preterm babies don't have to be, it just doesn't matter, I guess, mm-hmm. at this point.
Did she have a low birth weight?
She had a low birth weight, but I was told by the tech when we used to do our ultrasounds that was not unusual, and it can happen, and it could be nothing.
Mm.
So we went out about our day, and like I had previously mentioned, I had a emergency C-section the day of my 36-week ultrasound. So I was not prepared at all. I went in with my little wallet and my phone, and I was going to get my pictures of my daughter, and that's all I thought it was going to be. But no, like, it was pull up a chair close to me. Something is wrong. We have to deliver, like, now.
Right now.
Yes.
How did you feel?
I felt devastated, of course, and I felt confused. I didn't know what to really feel. And I was kind of, like, disconnected until my daughter was born, and I didn't hear her cry. Because this is my first child, and I didn't know much of it, but I didn't know that when they're born, you're supposed to hear them cry. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't hear her cry, and I was like, that was my first question to my husband. He was right next to me in the C-section room, and I was like, why isn't she crying? And it was just brushed off, and she came close to me, like, quickly in the incubator. And they're like, okay, well, we're going to take her to the NICU. And I'm like, yeah.
You're taking her where?
I was just like, okay, yeah. I was like, sure. Whatever that means, you know?
Mm. I can't even imagine. That sounds like a whirlwind, like, 24-hour period, right? Did you have the opportunity, Amanda, to connect with other families while you were in the NICU?
Yeah.
What's that like?
Yeah, so different NICUs are set up a little bit differently. So there's some NICUs that are more pod style, where there's several beds in a single room, which is the experience that we had, and others have a private room. So what we had was, you know, you're kind of going through this journey together. You hear the sounds, the beeping, you hear the, you know, the crashes and the, you know, the devastating drops and heart rates happen all over the room. And then, you know, you're in it together, and you are trying to support one another. You're trying to learn from one another. Someone's been there longer than you. Someone's been there shorter time. There's different journeys, different ages. And
you're all of a sudden an expert to the family who just walked in.
A little bit. And I think it's when something bad happens next to you, you're kind of just hoping, okay, well, at least it's not my baby today, but then it is your baby, and people do understand. And, you know, in our situation where we had our daughter passed away at 6 weeks, you know, the support in there, just the eyes, even if they didn't come and talk to me, that they were knowing. And I think they were also grateful that it wasn't their baby. So there's that kind of push and pull in there, because it's so precarious every single moment. I mean, sometimes your baby is fine the one day, and the next day things are a mess. Mm-hmm. So it's such a roller coaster.
Yeah. You live by the hour sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, let me play what we've got from a doctor here. We talked to a neonatologist, Dr. Catherine Grodin of UChicago Medicine. She talked about what it's like for her to come into the NICU and make her rounds every morning.
We go around to the bedside of every baby, and we talk about everything that happened in the last 24 hours. There's a lot of numbers. There's a lot of acronyms. There's a lot of really difficult things for families to understand. But if the families are able to be at the bedside at that time, then we are able to include them in rounds. We're able to ask them for their perception on how the baby is doing, answer any questions they might have, and really bring their input into rounds in a way that is just a lot more logistically difficult to do when they can't be there in person.
And Dr. Grodin went on to talk about why it's important for parents to be present in the NICU with their babies.
Separation from the parent to go into the NICU is a really traumatic experience for both the baby and the parent. I think on a parent level, most parents want to be with their children, and on a baby level, our babies go through, you know, multiple painful or uncomfortable procedures every single day that are necessary to care for them. But without a parent there, then they are also going through that without the buffering presence of a parent, and things like skin to skin with a parent, breastfeeding, hand cuddling from the parent, even the parent's voice, have been shown to improve pain and distress in our patients. In addition, our goal is always to get our babies safe and healthy so that they can go home with their parents. And sometimes that does mean going home with extra devices or a baby who's just a little different than a full-term baby who went straight home from the well baby nursery. And so the more parents are there, the better they're able to learn how to care for their baby specifically.
I'm looking at you right now, Francinette, and I can kind of feel some emotion coming from you. I hear you were with your babies every day.
Every single day. It took us 380 days to get home.
Wow.
And I I am a firm believer, and I can attest to what she just said, that being there for your children makes a huge difference, and they feel you, and they know. And the skin-to-skin, it is so important. And you as a parent, nobody knows your babies like you do. The doctors can be there, the nurses can be there, but they're not there every day.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't see them every day. And, you know, they have other patients and they work 3 days or three not or anything. And it's your baby it's you. So it makes a humongous difference. I know that in a lot of cases you can't do it. If you have other children at home that you have to attend to. I was fortunate enough to where I was able to just dedicate my whole being to just them. And me having two, that was it. That was me. One in one room and the other in the next. And I literally sat in between.
So you could see them both.
So I could see both. And you become a nurse, an honorary nurse. You learn the terms for rounds. You learn every single thing mm-hmm. that they are doing. But it makes a humongous difference.
Yeah. And something else making a difference, this law that we're talking about today, right? Illinois'
yes.
Neonatal Intensive Care Leave Act. That's what it's called. It's entitling employees up to 20 days of additional leave. So it's not nothing, right? And
no,
that extra time, just from listening to the three of you, that extra time, it would mean, I think, a lot to you and your children.
Yes.
Right? To remain right by their sides. So tell me, Amanda and Francinette, because you started organizations, so the work continues for you.
Yes.
Tell us about the Little Warriors Project, Francinette.
So we are a new organization. We are, right now, our mission is just to give a little light of sun to the parents while in the NICU.
Mm-hmm.
I remember how dark it can get, and you get so isolated that you just want to give a small gift, a little reminder that there's people that still that are thinking of you, that
right.
still love you, that you're not in this by yourself. So we work on peer donations, and we give care packages or gifts to different NICUs in the Chicago area as of right now. Our ultimate goal is to develop a transportation service for parents and their children after the NICU so that they can go to their appointments or things like that, because that is one of the issues.
Wonderful.
You don't get to, if you don't have a second driver with you or a caregiver with you, you can't go to places.
Yeah.
And eventually, when everything is in order, we hopefully can get a respite, daily respite care for parents to be able to go grocery shopping mm-hmm. or go to work.
That's great.
I didn't work for 4 years because I had to, you know, be at home because of the nursing shortage. So we have our website, thelittlewarriorsproject.com. There's different ways that you can be a part of it. You
awesome.
Know, we do encouraging letters, products that you can donate. Visit the website and you can always participate.
Yeah, that's really wonderful. Tell us about the Little Giraffe Foundation, Amanda.
Yes. So my husband and I started the Little Giraffe Foundation in 2011, a couple of days after my daughter passed away. So while my son was still in the NICU, Lutheran General.
Yeah.
It was a very great way to deal with grief and put our grief into some work and something positive. So when we founded it, we similarly wanted to bring light and love to folks who are in the NICU and feel very isolated. Our babies were born in the winter. Grandparents are even restricted from visiting. So mm-hmm. When our babies got a gift, we got, I think, some little booties and a small rattle or something. And we were actually pretty surprised that, someone knows we're in here. It mm-hmm. didn't feel like
nice.
That. And that feeling was really impactful on us.
Yes.
So we wanted to pay that forward. And so we now do that 6 times a year at 23 hospitals. And we've given over 38,000 gifts.
Incredible.
Throughout Chicagoland. We're in every NICU. So if you've had a baby in the NICU, you probably got one of our gifts. And that's the direct impact with the NICU families. But we also offer NICU support grants to the institutions and other nonprofits that support these families in while they're in the NICU. And so we have funded hundreds of NICU support grants to hospitals. So voice recorders. So, you know, if you can't be there, you can record your voice and have your baby hear you. We do food and gas programs for folks who are commuting quite a ways to their NICU to enable them to be able to, you know, manage that.
Wow, that's so all encompassing. I love to hear that. And I want to shout out Aureli, who's doing these TikToks, right? You've got folks on social media, you know, all in a frenzy because you're giving them a glimpse into the life of a child who was in the NICU, right? And living with medical issues. Tell me about the reactions, the feedback. What are you hearing from people who come across your page on TikTok?
I think that I had a private where I was in the NICU, and then I decided to be very vulnerable and let it be public because it took me a while to even come out to family and our social media to say, hey, this is where we've been, and this is, our daughter's coming home soon, and she's coming home with a trig, a ventilator, a G-tube, and I didn't want to take anybody by surprise and have just stares when they meet her for the first time. I wanted to really put that out there that our daughter, this is our daughter, and this is how we're going to accept her.
Yes. I'm so glad you were able to come to that place.
Yeah. And it took a lot, too. It's a very private matter, but, and I was very scared, like, are people going to reject her? Are people going to stare at her? Are people going to treat her differently? And by surprise, no. Like, she, I don't know if it's because of her character, because she is such a, like, despite everything she's been through,
she's so cute. I can't wait to meet her after we're finished.
Besides the adorableness, she is so joyful and so determined to do anything.
Yeah.
And that type of resilience has really inspired those around her.
You are inspiring everyone watching your videos for sure. We'll leave it there. We've been talking about Illinois now being the second state in the country to give eligible parents up to 20 days of unpaid leave to take care of their babies in the NICU with Aureli Flores, who is a Chicago resident and mom, Amanda Santoro, who's from Mount Prospect, and she's also a mom, and she's co-founder of the Little Giraffe Foundation, and Francinette Yamas, who's from Beecher, and she's a mom and founder of the Little Warriors Project. Thank you all so much for sharing your stories.
Thank you.
And for the work that you're doing.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise.
Now we'll turn to the top stories of the day in Chicago and Illinois. We checked in with an all WBEZ panel of journalists. Reporter and anchor Araceli Gomez-Aldana, reporter Summer Van Benton, and Claire Lane, WBEZ's Morning Edition anchor. Speed demons, be warned. Illinois is cracking down on drivers with excessive speed convictions. Claire, kick things off with those details.
Cracking down on those drivers, but also now giving them a way to maybe keep their license, keep them on the roads.
Okay.
So this is for drivers across the state that have multiple excessive speeding convictions. But they could soon equip their cars with a speed monitoring device, kind of a system that would physically be in their car as a way to remain a legal driver. So state lawmakers approved a framework. This is being called the Intelligent Speed Assistance Program. Doesn't really slide off the tongue.
Not at all.
And this isn't necessarily for DUIs or some of those bigger ticket offenses. This could even be for drivers who've been convicted of going over those 26 miles an hour speed limit or faster at least twice. So now, if you're one of these people, you have the option essentially to install one of these devices which could cost you up to $30 a month, plus installation, plus daily fees. But in return, you get to remain a driver.
Wow.
So the measure still needs Governor J.B. Pritzker's approval. But again, you know, Illinois always looking for cash.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the gig economy, there are a lot of people that need their cars, you know, to make a living.
Yes.
So this is a way, I think, to help some of those people
and
out.
A lot of those people need a device like this because they are whipping past me. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Especially I come up and down Lakeshore every single day to get here. And sometimes I'm like, okay, let me just move to the right because you've got somewhere to go that's clearly more important than I do.
Right. You got ticket money.
Speeding speeding in Chicago is really bad. Is that what you're seeing too, Summer?
It's so bad. You know, I've lived in a couple of cities now, Atlanta, D.C., New York, and Chicago is the first city where I've seen people deliberately run red lights.
Yes.
And that is absolutely wild to me.
We do that to intimidate you.
Oh, well.
We.
Oh,
so
we.
So now you're admitting that you're...
I'm an excellent driver. I don't have any tickets.
Very good.
Pristine driving record. But Summer's right. I mean, people really like to test the limits.
Yeah, they do. All right. Well, Summer, sticking with you here, the Obama Presidential Center held its press day yesterday. Exciting stuff. What did you see? Describe the campus.
I saw a lot, quite a bit. It's definitely a two-day affair. Most people have seen the museum driving by the massive structure, but there's also a forum where there's an auditorium space, spaces for people to have meetings. The 82nd Public Library Branch, it's gorgeous. It also has a lot of books that the Obamas have selected themselves. The home court facility has an NBA-sized basketball court. It's also very gorgeous. They're holding it for Obama to take the first step. That'll be exciting. The garden has so many seasonal fruits and vegetables, from blueberries to peppers. Yummy. And, you know, my people know I love a cookout. There are so many picnic benches and grills. So go out there and grill, people.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
It sounds absolutely beautiful. Now, there's also this emphasis at the Obama Presidential Center on creating a welcoming environment for everyone, particularly young people.
Yes.
You know, we want to draw young people, you know, of all ages. We've got a playground for the little ones. And then we've got a basketball court for the big ones. And the programming that we're going to do, we're in partnership with After School Matters for our Teen Action Lab to really start doing programming this summer. We will use our home court space for starters to introduce folks to athletics and to different kinds of sports. But then over time, you'll see us trying to use sports as a gateway to teaching kids about careers and what career pathways, where you don't have to be an athlete, where you don't have to be an artist to get into the arts. You know, you can be the business manager, the finance person.
This is much more than a museum, much more than a library. It's a fantastic space.
Mm-hmm. That was Tina Chin, who's head over programming at the Obama Presidential Center. And you explained it just right, Sasha. It's a space where people to come and treat it as a third space. They want people to feel comfortable. And in the spirit of teen takeovers being a huge conversation right now, that's one thing that I was keeping an eye out on yesterday, seeing if it truly felt welcoming and it felt like a space where people can just hang out.
Yeah. They talk about, you know, when we discuss the teen takeovers, a lot of the counter conversation is, well, some of the programs that are being offered by the city or, you know, just by official organizations, young people don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so this just sounds to me like, okay, you've got this NBA-sized court. You've just got all of the things peppered in there to make them want to stay and be occupied.
Yes. The conversation just around third spaces where you don't have to pay to participate.
Yeah.
You can just exist and be in community. I mean, this sounds like a great opportunity for that.
Definitely. I definitely brought my overnight oats yesterday and I was like, you know what? I'm going to bring my overnight oats again and just chill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the official opening date is June 19th. No tickets are left for opening day. Is there a wait list, Summer?
There's not a formal wait list, but I checked the website this morning. The nearest date to get tickets is July 13th, and then there are a plethora in August. So definitely, if you want to go, get your tickets now. People are interested. Clearly, people are flying in for this event. So get those tickets.
Sure.
But to your point, too, you don't have to have a ticket to enjoy a lot of this
outdoor stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
The tickets are for the museum, to be very clear.
Right.
And they're time-ticketed slots.
Araceli, let's pivot to some other news here. There's a petition to reinstate two nurses who were fired over unionizing efforts, and it's gained a lot of support. Tell us the story.
Yeah, this is a developing story from our colleague, Kristen Shore. She did great reporting on this. So this is about 1,000 people have signed a petition to reinstate two nurses at Endeavor Health who were fired, allegedly over unionizing efforts. So this happened in May. The nurses are experienced senior nurses. They work in the intensive care unit at Evanston Hospital. They say they were allegedly fired after dropping off gift bags with union information at Evanston Hospital. And a little bit of background here, Sasha. Mm-hmm. This is nearly 3,000 nurses at Endeavor Hospital in the Chicago suburbs are trying to unionize over what they say are dangerous and understaffing conditions.
Well, Trisha Poretta is one of those nurses leading the organizing efforts. Let's listen to what she had to say.
This was a movement to reincite that fear and control, and it's really had the opposite effect.
Yeah, like we're saying, I mean, 1,000 people have already signed this petition.
It's also gaining support from U.S. Senator Jesus Chuy Garcia. What made him weigh in?
Yeah, as some say, he joined the chat recently.
He joined the group chat.
Yes, he's calling for Endeavor to bring back the fired nurses. And he says all workers should have the free and fair choice to join a union. And this tracks, Sasha, because he, you know, as we know, Garcia has been, you know, very active and he has progressive organizing roots.
Mm. Have we heard anything from Endeavor? Have they responded?
They told our colleague that they respect bargaining rights, but they're also prioritizing patient safety.
Okay. Mm. Back to you, Claire, because we've been talking this week on WBEZ about the rise in airbag thefts. There are some updates, right? Some efforts to stop these thefts. Tell us what's going on.
Yeah, Chicago is trying to crack down a bit on these thefts. I mean, we've seen them across the city. There is really no neighborhood that is safe.
Yeah.
And they are targeting some specific vehicles. But just yesterday, the City Council Public Safety Committee, in their committee hearing, passed a measure that makes it illegal to purchase airbags from anywhere other than a repair shop, a recycling facility, or the original manufacturer of the airbag, so say from Honda or something like that. Mm. Chicago alderperson Gilbert Villas says that there have been over 2,100 airbag thefts so far in the city this year.
Why? What's fueling the demand for airbags?
So this is going back to something that happened. There was a recall of 67 million defective airbags that began a decade ago. So the demand for these has caused sort of a backlog. Mm-hmm. So there have been, you know, they become more valuable because of that. So what thieves are doing is they're breaking into your car. They're not taking any of your loose change. They're not taking your stereo. Remember when they did that?
Yes. Yeah.
But they are just taking your airbag sell them. There's sort of a black market for these things because they're harder to get. There's longer wait times. And they've been pretty successful in making some money from these things.
Just when I thought I had heard it all.
Yeah, but those, I mean, quote unquote, these bad actors, it's not like they're going to listen and say, don't buy them from unofficial, I don't know. That's interesting.
Or, you know, we had a thought, I think this is when Mariah Wolfel was hosting her show. She said this happened to her in consecutive weeks months.
Goodness.
It was like right when she got the new one. Then a week later,
someone stole her other airbag.
Exactly.
Goodness.
So it is a problem. And at least the city is trying to take some steps to curb this. And as far as I know, the city is also offering that club steering wheel lock to certain people at a discounted rate or something along those lines, because that's really the only way to kind of protect yourself from some of these pesky things.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Right. I've seen them. I've been seeing them more and more.
How are people stealing airbags?
I don't even want to know. Let's pivot to the arts, Araceli. Yeah. Chicago's Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events, or DCASE, they announced a new grant program. Who can apply for this?
So this, the city says, is to strengthen infrastructure and build audiences for emerging theaters. So they will provide $50,000 to about 8 nonprofit theaters. They have to have been in business at least 3 years, but no more than 10 years, and have an annual operating budget of $500,000 or less. They also have to demonstrate a commitment to producing and presenting theatrical work.
Mm, yeah, listen, this is any kind of grant is good news in my book, because we've just been talking so much about all the federal funding cuts to the arts, right? Just things being slashed left and right, and theater groups really struggling to keep the shows going for their audiences.
Especially post-pandemic.
Yeah. So who's funding this, and when do those applications open up?
Right. So funding comes from, that I had it written down, the Pritzker Foundation. And then also, if you want to apply, you can apply right now. It's open for about a month until July 8th. And the city says that recipients will be notified in September. Payments can go out as early as December.
All right. Any other stories you're following, Claire?
Yes, since we've been talking so much saga drama about the Bears, kind of a fun little story, a little coup for Caleb Williams, Bears QB. He is going to be the cover athlete on the next edition of a very popular football video game, the Madden NFL 2027 game. He's actually the first Bear to be on the main cover in the game's nearly 40-year history. And this was a game, you know, people used to stand outside of like Best Buy waiting to get every year. It's very popular. But many of us remember that big win, that January 10th win over Green Bay, and he sort of stepped back did like the juke and jive.
That pass
is sort of what is his stance is going to be featured in that style. But Williams says that it's actually an homage to Jumpman himself, Michael Jordan.
Jordan.
The most famous Chicago athlete.
Good old MJ.
Exactly. So it all comes back to the GOAT.
Very nice. All right, Summer, Mayor Brandon Johnson launched a new partnership. Tell us about the Get Summer program.
Yeah, so the Get Summer program offers teens free memberships to YMCA, and it's funded by the city, by Mayor Brandon Johnson and his administration. You know, this is really cool, and I love that they're encouraging you to get out, get active, and do something productive with their summer. It's for Chicago teens ages 12 to 18, and it runs from June 8th into August. So teens have this awesome opportunity.
Very good.
Now, Planet Fitness has done something similar in my...
They did.
My daughter just signed up, and I had no idea.
This is good.
You know, well, it's amazing, but for those regular gym goers, it's been very packed. Oh. So
all the teeny boppers are the teeny boppers on the treadmill.
So I recommend if you are at the YMCA, like, be kind, be gentle to your high school, you know, fellow athletes.
All you have to do is go out early because you know those teens are sleeping in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. By the time I got home yesterday afternoon, my daughter was just leaving to go to the gym.
See?
So there you go. Okay. Real quick before I let you go, tell me what else you've got coming up. Araceli?
Yeah. So Lauren Fitzpatrick and I are working on a story that looks into census data and same-sex households. And we've looked into the data and it shows some interesting neighborhoods that have been increasing kind of fast. Ooh. So we're going to look, we've been going to these neighborhoods, talking to people, and we'll have a story out soon.
Awesome. Summer.
Really cool. Mm-hmm. So my focus for the next couple of weeks will, of course, be on the Obama Presidential Center, but I'm also tracking a story of West Side community organizers who are working with the Chicago History Museum to create an installation that reflects the archival silence of the West Side. So that event, culminating event, will happen at the end of the month, which will be really interesting.
WBEZ's Summer Van Benten, Araceli Gomez-Aldana, and Claire Lane.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Micah Yason, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.